Blog Talk Radio.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruption. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on Deport from 29 District. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with Coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.
Hello and welcome to Provocative Thought, intimately known as PT, striving to awaken those who are asleep, stimulate those who are awakened, feed those who are starving, and nurture those who seek to know. I am your host, Carlton Steed, a self-proclaimed student of life. In the search, discovery, and revelation of life on life's terms. First, I'd like to thank We Talk Productions for allowing me to host this show. I'd also like to thank the creator for allowing me to be. You can contact the show by dialing 563-999-3478. Please. Press the number one to speak. You can contact the show by dialing 563-999-3478. Please press the number one to speak. You can reach us on the internet at www.blogtalkradio.com. Go to search. Type in We Talk Productions and listen to the show live. You can also contact us on Facebook at Provocative Thought PT Community Organization. Tonight's topic, slavery and beyond. The continuation of an oppressive and tyrannical situation. We have already covered African presence in the Americas before Columbus and the Clovis people. I can't imagine that not one of these indigenous peoples were forced into slavery. African presence in the Americas appears to be a well-kept secret, but African presence in the Americas as slaves is well-published and documented. Depending on what you read, the African came to the Americas in chains in the belly of slave ships. These Africans were skilled and educated people whose sweat and blood built the United States of America. That's not what it was when they first got here, right? So they were not dumb or less than human beings. They were the descendants of the masters of the planet, the forefathers of civilizations, high culture, mathematics, science, astronomy, medicine, religion, spirituality, building, and agriculture, and more. Hey, they were descendants of a cerebral and mighty warrior people. Rather victims of division, war, or curse by the Creator, some came in the belly of the ships of the beast from climate. They tagged slavery officially from 1501 to 1865. I mean that officially. That's a tag that was given, right? That's what they say officially, because we all know stuff happened and stuff continued to happen, right? So anyway, it's a 1501 African slaves in the New World. The Spanish settlers bring slaves from Africa to Santo Domingo, now known as what? Capital of the Dominican Republic. A lot of people go down there to do things. I'm just going to leave it at that. 1865, slavery was abolished. 13th Amendment to the United States Constitution outlaws slavery on the books. And that means something. On the books, you're not supposed to. Just like on the books, murder is illegal, right? But in reality, people murder every day, right? Okay, and kill people in ways you can't imagine, which I'm going to cover on some of my shows later on. So to quote the poet Noor, I don't want to go through this whole slavery thing because it's I don't like it, you know. And I don't want to really talk too much about too much of the bad stuff that happened in slavery. But I'm going to quote the poet Noor. As slaves, black men and women were treated like objects of possession to perform and behave as willed by their capture. Rapist, murderer, torturer, abuser, intimidator, and enemy. Slavery contributed to the destruction of the mind, spirit, body, individual, ethical foundation, culture, relationships, families, communities, sovereignty, and peace of the enslaved people. Confused as to why some folks think it appropriate to reference 1865 as the end of black folks' suffering. Injustices of rape, murder, torture, abuse, intimidation, and the tyranny of white American supremacy. If it were so, 1865 was like hallelujah, like it's over. If it was like that, there would have been no need for the civil rights movement. And a whole lot of stuff that happened before then, right? But I'm just bringing it up to the book stuff, right? There would have been no need for civil rights and civil rights laws and stuff like that if that was the end to everything, 1865. But as we all know, or some of us, and hope by listening tonight, if you didn't know, now you know, right? So that didn't stop it. That didn't end anything. Just like we have laws against thievery and murder right now. Those things continue to go on. The books got a law say, hey, can't do that. In reality, people doing it, right? So, okay. So, if it was so, we wouldn't still be protesting injustices committed by government agents, agencies, and citizens. After the slaves were free, they were enslaved again by the same monsters that enslaved them in the first place. From history.com. The black unemployed were imprisoned by law for loitering. They were imprisoned by law. Sharecroppers enslaved them by law. This was the state of work, constant work and debt that they put these people in. The black codes criminalized being black and unemployed. So, you know, just think, if you were a slave, you've never worked a job, your father never worked a job and got paid for it, right? And now all of a sudden, you want to ask that same guy to pay you. And that guy's looking at you like a horse. Like, I own you. I used to own you yesterday. I'm not paying you nothing. Tell you what we're going to do. We're going to lock you up, incarcerate you, put you in jail, put you back on my farm to work at the punishment. Anyway. Slavery was abolished except as a punishment for a crime. That's till this day. Remember that, y'all. Look it up. Do your own research. It was a crime to be unemployed with, which forced many blacks into slavery again. It was a crime to be unemployed. So if you free a slave, a guy that you've been doing whatever you want to do with him, right? But he's not getting paid for that stuff. And now he's saying, hey, I can get paid. I don't have to do this. Okay, you know, so you got to pay me for that, boss. Boss man is saying, hey, no, I ain't paying you nothing. I'm thinking of a way to put you back into slavery. And that's what they did. One of the books, actually. So, blacks were assigned to an annual labor contract. They signed a labor contract that ensured that they would make the lowest pay possible. Sound familiar? Failed to sign the contract, they could be arrested, sentenced to work for free or fined. So, you know, how's that? You're a slave. You don't have dust in your pocket. You don't even have dust in your pocket. They're talking about fining you for not signing a contract that enslaved you. This is the madness that the people had to go through. Failed to pay the fine, and they were ordered to work off the debt or be enslaved, right? So basically they were telling them all kinds of ways that they could be a slave, you know what I'm saying? So the black codes placed black people under surveillance. They needed passes and to move from place to place or leave town. So that doesn't sound good, slave, to you. I don't know what you need to convince you. Black children were placed by the state in an apprenticeship if parents were seen as unfit. Again, providing more free labor. The Civil Rights Act of 1866 gave black people a right to rent or own property. I don't know how they did that, but I guess a few of them did do it. There was more, but with the passing of the 14th Amendment and the 15th Amendment, it barred the right to vote based on race. So they couldn't say, hey, you can't vote because you are black. They didn't use that word, though. They used the other word, the N-word, right? Anyway, then came Jim Crow, or a variation of the same theme, right? So these guys were like, they went from one part of hell to another. Jim Crow. Who is Jim Crow anyway? I should have looked that up. Because Jim Crow, why did they call Jim and Crow? That's very interesting right there. Anyway, it was the name of a racist caste system that operated primarily, but not exclusively, in the southern border states between 1877 and the mid-1860s. So as Jim Crow is operating documentedly, right, from 1877 and the mid-1960s, I tell you right there that the state of tyranny and oppression that black folks lived under in this country lasted well into the 60s, right? Jim Crow was more than a series of rigid anti-black laws. They said it was more than that. It was a way of life. Under Jim Crow, African Americans were relegated to the status of second-class citizens. Seems to me like less than that. Jim Crow represented the legitimization of anti-black racism. It's okay to be up against a black man. There he is. Get off the curb. Stop looking at my white woman. Or, you know it's going to happen. You know, come in the back door. You can't come in here. Don't let me catch you in town past sundown. All that good stuff, right? You know. Many Christian ministers and theologians taught that the whites were the chosen people. Mm-hmm. Blacks were cursed to be servants, and God supported racial segregation. Many Christian ministers. I'm going to go wild on a limb and say those Christian ministers were of the European persuasion. Craniologists and eugenicists and phrenologists and social Darwinists at every educational level tried to sell the belief that blacks were innately just born, right, intellectually and culturally inferior to white. So blacks are genetically inferior to white folks. They was teaching that, you know, everything about a black man was just inferior to the white man. That's strange, because you bring a man over to do work that you don't want to do, and you calling him inferior. That's very interesting. Pro-segregation politicians gave speeches on great danger of integration. They don't want them brothers smashing the white girls, right? Because we know they were smashing, raping the black women, the black slaves, and some black men. We know they're raping everything, the kids, women, children, and they're raping everything that they could, whatever they wanted to do, right? There's nobody there to stop them, right? So, but they didn't want you to smash the white woman, right? How dare you spoil my white woman. And the penalty for that was, death. Probably after castration. Anyway, they talked about the danger of integration, mongrelation of the white race, and bringing these kids, oh, he looks white, but he's not. He's N-word, right? Newspaper and magazine writers routinely referred to blacks as, I'm going to say, niggers, coons, darkies, and worse, right? Their articles reinforced anti-black stereotypes. This is when they was ganging up on black folks, like, everywhere, the social media, on the street, everywhere, you know? So even children's games portray blacks as inferior beings. So this is being drilled into black folks, into white folks for generations, that this guy is less than you. This guy is less than you. You are less than me. You are less than me. So just think about hearing that. And then people enforcing that type of regimen by making sure that you have less than him, right? Kind of to what they're saying. Well, you live in squalor. We don't. You know, you have less than me. I have more than you. You have to be less than me. Anyway, so all major societal institutions reflected and supported the oppression of blacks. All major societal institutions reflected and supported the oppression of black folks. That is a hell of a weight. That's not a foot on your neck, right? That's a whole society on your neck, right? I read Jim Crow started in the North, though. Yes, the good old North. Don't get it twisted. You could and can get lynched in the North just the same as you could get lynched in the South. The Civil War was not fought to save black folks from the tyranny of slavery. It was fought to, as Lincoln said, to save the Union. Do your own research, okay? I would hope that folks are not thinking that those white folks murdered each other, butchered each other, because one despised slavery that much more than the other. It was slavery that made the plantation owners wealthy and the northern banks wealthy and powerful. It is true, a nation divided cannot stand. So off to war they went. The rest is history, right? I'm not spending too much time on it, on this slavery thing. Because bad stuff happened. You just name it. Think of any kind of bad thing you could think of happened to somebody, and it happened. All right? So, you know, do your own research. You want to read about the atrocities of slavery. And I'm just going to go run through this little Jim Crow thing, and we're going to keep it moving forward, because this type of stuff, this is of the seeds of what we see today. From Dr. Pilgrim, professor of sociology in Ferris State University. This was in September 2000. Edited, said that Jim Crow system was based on a beliefs or rationalizations. What's rational about a man's skin making him inferior? I don't get that. Whites were superior to blacks in all important ways. This don't even sound right. They used the word rationalization where whites are superior to blacks in all important ways. That doesn't make sense. What's the rationalization? Including but not limited to intelligence, morality, and civilized behavior. Sexual relations between blacks and whites would produce a mongrel race which would destroy America. Let me see. Let me get this right. Sex between a black and a white person would produce a mongrel race, which race would destroy America. This is said by a descendant of the people who actually did destroy America, who came here from the East Coast and just murdered their way to the West Coast. Lake Michigan. And what's that down there by Texas and Florida? Whatever that is, you know, this is very interesting. I mean, well, as we know, to the victor goes the spoils of war. And that means you get to write, you know, he gets to write his story. So, okay. Yeah, right. Okay. I'm reading it. This just doesn't even sound like some of the words they're using in the description. I need to just keep reading it. This is just information I'm sharing anyway. But y'all got, this just sounds so weird reading, you know, where you're talking about rationalization. The whites were superior to blacks, you know, but you had to go get black man to come work for you and do things for you to build your country. So if it was superior, why aren't you doing that work yourself? I don't know. Anyway, America was treating blacks, what did they say? They said, whites were superior to blacks in all important ways, including but not limited to intelligence, morality. You got slaves, you raping people, you dismembering people, you having a picnic when you pick somebody to lynch, which lynching consisted of dismembering, torturing, burning, breaking, stabbing, just all kinds of nonsense to a person, a live person, just because he's black. For whatever little reason you decide to lynch that person for, or no reason at all, right? So, sexual relations between blacks and whites would produce a mongrel race which would destroy America. Treating blacks as equal would encourage interracial sexual unions. How could he say this when he's already raping black women and men and children? But it's contrary to what he actually does. Any activity which suggests social equality encourages interracial sexual relationships. If necessary, clinch it right here. Violence must be used to keep blacks at the bottom of the racial hierarchy. Bam! Now, if this was the train of thought based on, this is Mr. David Pilgrim, professor of sociology, right, saying this, saying that this is the train of thought for these folks. So you beating your this and your kid, same time you don't want that. Sounds like it really translates to white women do not have sex with this black man. That's what it is, because white men, they seem to be raping and doing what they want to do to anybody they came into, doing their thing. So maybe, I don't know, they're saying don't have sex with them, but they creeping and having sex. Thomas Jefferson had family with a black lady. I don't know if George Washington did, but I wouldn't be surprised if he didn't. And, but here's the point. Understand this. Violence must be used to keep blacks at the bottom of the racial hierarchy. So he's less than me, and I must use violence to subdue him, to keep him in his place. Now, just imagine a group of people growing up with that train of thought, and you walk through their neighborhood. You walk into their store, right? So, anyway, that explains the historical unprovoked attacks on black folks. This whole idea right here. They're less than you, so that means you could, string him up, cut him up, burn him up, cut his jewels off, right, or whatever. And that's how you get take a picture doing something as heinous as that, because you're not viewing this person as a human being. Somehow, some reason, you're able to do that. And you've been trained and supported in committing violence against these people. As you do your own research, you'll see some lynchings. It's like hundreds of people, men, women, and children there taking pictures next to a man and they lynch. I saw pictures coming up to logs and put him on fire. They stand there like it's a barbecue. And nobody is horrified by that. They're just there watching this man burn. Men, women, and children. It's like some young kids there, taking a picture like they had, like it's a deer or something. So, but you start to see the what's inside of the people who may be attacking black folks unprovokedly. You know what I'm saying? So, it kind of explains some of the behavior I've seen coming up. Some white folks, if you come into their community, some of them would attack you. Not all of them. But, they had some community. They ain't want you in there. They, group of guys in there, they come out to get you. From the Berea College student at the part of a course on Chestnut, right? They said from 1882 to 1968, 4,743 lynchings occurred in the United States. Of those people that were lynched, 3,444 were black. 4,743 lynchings occurred in the United States from a period of from 1882 to 1968. Of those people, 3,446 were black. The blacks lynched accounted for 72.7% of the people lynched. The numbers seem large, but it is known that not all the lynchings were ever recorded. That's right. Out of the 4,743 people lynched, only 1,297 white people were lynched. That is only 27.3%. Many of the whites lynched were lynched for helping the black or being anti-lynching or even for domestic crimes. That's a hell of a sentence just for helping the black. And that's probably why, again, why some white people just don't intervene, because the repercussion for they're not willing to, you know, when you see that in the hood, people not willing to come out about things because they know the police can't protect them. You're going to testify. Police can't really, let they sit on your house for the rest of your life. Sometimes they're not going to, or until anybody dies out or go to jail for life, you know, you're not going to be safe. So some of these white people, instead of, they had some brave white brothers that, hey, don't do that. And they killed him. That's how egregious that was to them. How dare you try to help this thing that we're trying to get up on this rope? You must want to get up there with him. And they put him up there, right beside the black person. So if you're trying to help us, you get the same fate that we get, right? So the same fate of a black man is due you. If you Caucasian, European, persuasion, and you try to help that black man. Now, maybe that's why some people ain't making a move. They afraid for their life. And I understand that. But I sure would appreciate somebody making a move to, you know, help me or somebody that I know would care about, and or anybody, really. You know, if being lynched, that ain't right. This thing called the Negro Holocaust, lynching and race riots in the United States, 1880 to 1950. Excuse me. By Robert A. Gibson. He said, immediately after the Reconstruction, the federal government of the United States restored white supremacist control to the South and adopted this laissez-faire policy to regard the Negro, or disregard the Negro. The Negro was betrayed by his country. I didn't know he had a country back then. This policy resulted in Negro disenfranchisement, social, educational, and employment discrimination. And just as I said, you know, you getting the scraps off the table if you get that, right? Deprived of the civil and human rights, blacks were reduced to a status of quasi-slavery or second-class citizenship. The tense atmosphere of racial hatred, ignorance, and fear bred lawless, mass violence, murder, and lynching. All right? So this is consistent. Now, this may sound crazy to some people, but you got to look at it the way it happened. Folks came over here on the little boats, came up on the shores, on the East Coast, got a little help from Squanto and whoever. And look, as soon as they got on their feet, they start spreading out. When they spread out, they start killing what's in their path. And they spread out some more. They spread out more and more. And they all of a sudden, gold. Oh, you know, oh. Treaty after treaty broken. Oh, y'all got to move. We got to come get this gold. Y'all got to go. I don't care how sacred this is to you. If your life is sacred, you got to get out of here. We got a place for you. You got to go. Right? So this guy just moved like a virus, like this virus, like COVID, right? This original COVID. Europeans coming to the Americas, right? Coming here and just killing up everything, right? Or what was left after the disease killed them, right? So, according to the Tuskegee Institute figures, between years 1882 and 1951, 4,730 people were lynched in the United States, 3,437 Negro, and 1,293 white. The largest number of lynchings occurred in 1892. Of the 230 persons lynched that year, 161 were Negroes and 69 whites. 161 were Negroes. Negroes, y'all heard that word before. Negro from Spanish means black, right? dark, right? Negro, right? Means dark in Spanish, right? Okay, so another fact that refutes the fallacy of rape, I don't know why they had this on here, but as being the primary cause of Negro lynchings, is that between 1882 to 1927, 92 women were victims of lynch mobs, 76 Negro and 16 white. Certainly they could not have been rapists. You know what? We don't even care about that. Rape is not the motivation for the lynching. The lynching is your color of your skin and the lawlessness and the viciousness of these Europeans who took it upon themselves to murder, torture people. That's the problem. That it's not an issue of if rape was the issue, why the primary reason cause of lynchings. But when you think about it, let me see. The statement about rape is misleading and almost suggests that rape is not a reason or motivation used for lynching. The primary cause of Negro lynching is just because they are black. They use any excuse for lynching a black person. A black man could be lynched for less than raping a white woman. Lynching consists of beating, dismemberment, and burning folk alive, right? And some other stuff. Sometimes many people, men, women, and children came from miles around to watch the event. Emmett Till, right? What was it, 1955? He was 14 years old, was accused of whistling, a dog whistling at a white lady or something. Guys came to his grandparents' house. He took him out, beat him, shot a big hole in his head, threw a fan around his neck, threw him in the Tallahassee River, 14-year-old kid. Two grown cowards. Black Wall Street was destroyed after a black man was accused of touching a white woman inappropriately on an elevator. Blacks came to protect the man from a lynch mob, and the rest is history. I don't know if y'all know about, I talk about Black Wall Street all the time. We have white women accusing black men today. And they talking about rape wasn't a reason, the little kid, a primary reason. We don't care about primary reasons. You mean the primary reason is the color of his skin. That's why they lynched a white man, because he's helping a man who they hate. They are breeding their children to hate and to think of less of. So that's why that's going on like that. So, and that's why when you run into that, you got to understand that's intergenerational. That's not just that guy just woke up like that. His generation, he got support on being that type of person. And it's anyway. After more than 70 years, four black men wrongly accused of rape have been exonerated. See, these four black men wasn't lynched, right, 70 years ago, right? They said this is Fort Lauderdale, Florida. A judge officially exonerated four young African-American men of the false accusation that they raped a white woman 7 decades ago. So that whole thing about being lynched for raping a white woman, that's real. That's all the word prevalent has little to nothing to do with anything. You can just take that. He can just take that word out of his sentence. Does that sound like he's trying to take the sting out of the thing they do when they feel somebody touched that white woman? And, you know, that's a big thing. As I just said to you, these people are less than you. And we have to use violence to keep them in their place. And they cannot mate with our women, because they couldn't have meant that for the men, because the men was raping black women all the time. Some of those rape men in slavery. Some of the women, I guess, forced these black guys to have sex with them. And that's a catch 22. That's like a damn if you do, damn if you don't situation. Because she could kill you, have you something done to you if you don't do it. And if you do it and you get caught, you know you're going to get your gizzards cut off and they're going to string you up. Anyway, race and wrongful convictions in the United States 2022. from the University of Michigan Law School, right? They said that this is by S.R. Gross. He said, cited by 156, judging from exonerations, innocent, black Americans are 7 times more likely than white Americans to be falsely convicted of serious crimes. From the root, 15 times white women's lies and hysteria hurt people of color. From Kaylin Warmack, Carolyn Bryant Donham. I just told you about her. She lied about Emmett Till, got him murdered, tortured, and murdered. Didn't do a day in jail, not one day. And her husband and my brother, I think, I don't know who was, they walked, basically. The Scottsboro trial, Ruby Bates and Victoria Price, 31, 9 teenage black boys, Clarence Norris Jr., Charlie Weems, Ozzie Powell, Andrew Wright, Leroy Wright, Olin Montgomery, Willie Robinson, Haywood Patterson, and Eugene Williams were falsely accused of rape by 2 white women while riding a train. Ruby Bates, 17, and Victoria Price, 21, said the boys came upon them, started a fight with several white men riding in the same car. They claimed the boys kicked the white men out to sexually assault the 2 women. The doctor testified the girls showed signs of sexual intercourse, but not of rough treatment. The ACL journalist Horace Ransdell said Price and Bates were known as quiet prostitutes. Bates admitted to Ransdell she was forced into following Victoria's lead in the allegations, which led to decades of the boys fighting to get out of prison to avoid state execution. So this is a state wanting to kill somebody for raping a white woman. All right? And these guys didn't even do it. HVAC Karen. I guess she called the HVAC man to the house to do a job, right? And she kept questioning him was he qualified. In the video she posted on social media, the woman is seen hysterical on the phone with 911 asking them to respond to her house because she was threatened and she was harassing the guy trying to do his job for her. Nikki Yovino, in 2018, Yovino admitted to falsely accusing 2 Sacred Heart University football players of rape 3 years prior. You feel me? The 2 men pulled her into the bathroom in the basement and held her down and assaulted her. Yeah, this is what we got. Oh, it's a white woman. Yeah, this, you know. This, I guess that's what the idea is. Everybody's thinking that, you know, I don't know what's the idea? That's the prize of what? They see a white woman, or they just gonna rape her? That's what women. I'm not saying that black guys haven't raped people, but I'm just saying like, yo, the rapists historically have always been these Europeans raping these slaves. Both of the men. So if anybody should be in fear of somebody raping somebody, it should be black folks. Folks. I'm going with the story. And I'm not saying all white people are rapists either. It's not the point. The point I'm just saying, like, people have been subjected to rape and attacks by white folks. Anyway, she admitted she lied against the student athletes because she was worried about her friends, what her friends would think about her. Now, she should have thought about that when she wanted to smash 2 guys, right, at the same time. You know, is that worth ruining somebody's life? Central Park, Karen, I saw this thing when I was on YouTube. New York woman, she was fired after falsely accusing a black man of attacking her. In 2020, Amy Cooper called the police on a black bird watcher, right, in Central Park after he asked her to put her dog on a leash, right, because he was roaming around with his teeth, wagging his tail, showing his teeth, you know, drooling, you know. So the woman responded. With a tantrum, which he caught on video. She all called the police and began screaming and throwing a fit on the phone, alleging Christian was harming her from the 10-foot distance in which he was standing. I saw that. He had a video camera. He was nowhere near it. So are we supposed to think that, at a time when they actually, you know, have this ideology, overt ideology that black people are less than and we have to use violence to keep them in place, that they wouldn't lynch a black man if they thought he raped or sexually assaulted or even just tried to talk to a white woman? Come on now. That's not far-fetched. And we're not doing the math on what percent of them were killed. Nobody should have been lynched for being accused of raping a white woman, because you see a lot of false charges going on till this day. This is 2020 right here. These other brothers, was that 2018, these two basketball players, and it goes on. It's lots of stuff like this. Not going to look all that stuff up because it's happening. You know, people lie all the time about stuff like that. Anyway, that is white power. When I think about it, being accused of raping a white woman doesn't make you guilty of raping a white woman, although the end result is the same. You could be lynched. You could lose your life. You could be incarcerated. In that sense, rape probably wasn't the actual reason some black men were lynched. See, and that, when you look at it like that, rape probably wasn't the actual reason why they got lynched. They were lynched because it was black. Doesn't matter if you rape somebody or not. Let's get that N-word. Let's get him up there and get him up there quick. I want to see him kick. I want to see him gag. I want to see how he takes it. National Geographic stated from 1877 to 1950, more than 4,400 black men and women and children, black men, women, and children, black men, women, and children were lynched by white mobs, according to the Equal Justice Initiative. See, that's just because you're black, and that's the motivation. The repetitive word, the thing that you see over and over again here is black. It's black, blackity, black, black, black. Right. So, are we to believe that black folks were not lynched before 1877 and after 1951? I don't think so. From the National Geographic, some historians say the violence perpetrated on thousands of black people who were lynched after the Civil War is a precursor to the vigilante attack and abusive police tactics still used against black people today. That's from the National Geographic. Anybody don't take a genius to figure that out? Because I just read this guy's talking about, you got to keep these people down. You got to use violence to keep them in their place. And they cannot mate with our women. But we will rape theirs when we get a chance. That's what it seemed like they were saying. So, you know, they can't marry them. You know, I don't know. These guys they did such a double standard. It's crazy. In short, old habits die hard, right? We can see it, right? The abusive police tactics still used against black people today. Old habits die hard. George Floyd was murdered, knee in his neck, live on television, live in front of folks walking down the street, live in front of about, what, two, three, maybe four other police officers. Nobody saved this man's life. Nobody was intelligent enough or brave enough to say, get off of him. So I'm glad I'm not a police officer, because I would have to smash that cop for that. We might have had a shootout out there that day. You're not getting me involved in stuff like that, number one. Two, kill nobody. You that's not your job. So it's a good thing I'm not a police officer, because, but really, they could have shot him for trying to choke that kid out if he wouldn't get up off of him. The same way they would shoot a civilian for choking a cop, putting his knee on a cop's neck, if he failed to get up off of him. when they said so, if they chose to say so, because he probably was just quoted all the clips of everybody's guns. Anyway, we know. We have George Floyd was handcuffed behind his back, guys on his legs, and dude on his neck. Come on, that's crazy. Man say he can't breathe. You on him? Then we have Breonna Taylor murdered during a phony police raid and assault. They already locked up her ex-drug dealing boyfriend, alleged drug dealing boyfriend. They already had him locked up. They already know she don't sell drugs. They try to, you know, embellish the story to make it sound like something might be going on in her house. But they shot her all up, you know. Got a shot randomly in the house with an automatic rifle, semi-automatic. I think it was automatic, the one they had. Anyway, Ahmaud Arbery. He was hunted in ambush and shot to death while jogging, at close range at that, while jogging. James Byrd Jr. was kidnapped, beaten, chained to the back of a truck, and dragged to death for 3 miles in 1988. So if you think this stuff didn't happen back then, we still got this stuff going on now. It was this one incident, I think my sister was telling me about a girl was tied to a tree, and they called it suicide. I forget what it was, something crazy, but they ruled it a suicide. It's like, yo, it's not suicide, you know. And I'm just wondering, what's that guy named to keep running to places, the civil rights, Ben Crump? How come he not running to these places like that? I mean, it may not be no money involved in that, but hey, that could happen to you, bro, or somebody in your family. Anyway, continue. The Negro Holocaust, lynching and race riots in the United States, 1880 to 1950. When the sentiment of community favored lynchings, the laws were all difficult or impossible to enforce. State authorities often attempted to prevent lynchings, but seldom punished the mob participants. Well, if you want to prevent lynchings, you got to punish the mob participants. So state authorities are not attempting to prevent lynchings, because if I'm not going to get punished for doing something, what's to stop me? So I don't know. Am I the only person that don't sound right to? Anyway, because of the tight hold on the courts by the local public opinion, lynchers were rarely ever indicted by a grand jury or sentenced. The judge, prosecutor, jurors, and witnesses, all white, were usually in sympathy with the lynchers. I guess they would be. And they probably were the lynchers. So a lot of them probably was out there. Does that sound familiar, y'all? Nat Turner. This is a brother that had enough of the BS, right? He just had enough. It's like he must have held it till he can hold it no more, right? Nat Turner, born October 2nd, 1800, Southampton County, Virginia, U.S., died November 11th, 1831, Jerusalem, Virginia. He was a black American slave who led the only effective sustained slave rebellion in the U.S. history, spreading terror throughout the white South. His actions set off a new wave of oppressive legislation. His actions set off a new wave of oppressive legislation prohibiting the education, movement, and assembly of slaves, and stiffened pro-slavery anti-abolitionist convictions, right? So they said, hell, we ain't getting rid of slavery. It's, you know, they was even more against it. But it seemed like if the man was running around killing folk, you would get the message, hey, these people don't want to be working for you for free. They tired of you tying them up, whipping them, castrating them, raping their women and children. They had enough of that. But this guy is blinded by, I don't know what he's blinded by, evil, you might call it that, but he's blinded by something. It's a veil over his face, and he even with the threat of his own life, he still wants to enslave this man, right? So as you know, they caught Nat Turner, you know, they squashed the rebellion, and I think they ended up taking Nat's head. Harriet Tubman. She escaped slavery to become a leading abolitionist. She led hundreds of enslaved people to freedom along the route of what they call the Underground Railroad, right? So she was born a slave in Maryland. She endured the harsh existence of a field hand. She was a hard-working slave. She worked on that field next to the men, right? Including brutal beatings. In 1849, she fled, leaving her husband and family behind in order to escape. Despite the bounty on her head, she returned and freed about 19 times to lead her family and hundreds of other slaves to freedom via the Underground Railroad. She also served as a scout, a spy, and a nurse during the Civil War. So Harriet Tubman is that's a bad sister right there. That's a revolutionary. See that? So y'all sisters out here who are afraid can't be afraid of revolution. Sojourner Truth was state New York. She was the African American evolutionist. I don't know why I'm having trouble with that word. Women's rights activist, right? She escaped with her infant daughter to freedom, devoted her life to the abolishment of slavery, right? Recruiting black troops for the Union Army, right? These are some folks back in the day, right? George Washington Carver. Now, I heard some very disturbing things about him, but I'm just going ahead with this part. This is very nice right here. Born a slave. He later, as a free man, earned his college degree. In 1896, he joined the staff of the Tuskegee Institute as director of the Department of Agricultural Resource. So, you know, George Washington could do miracles with it. I think we got him to thank for peanut butter, do we? And did he create peanut butter or what? I don't know. But he did hundreds of uses for peanut, sweet potato, the soybean, and thus stimulated the culture of these crops. He devised many products from cotton waste and extracted blue, purple, and red pigments from local clay. He, in 1935, he was a collaborator in the Bureau of Plant Industry. Carver contributed his life savings to the Foundation of Research at Tuskegee. Wow, that's interesting. He had no family, because I think the George Washington Carver that they castrated. I'm not sure. Scratch that from the record. I don't know, but I thought he was the one he talked with the high voice because they castrated him. I'm not sure. It's somebody. I don't forget who it was. Anyway, W.E.B. Du Bois was 1895. He became the first American to earn a doctorate from Harvard, but he fought for American rights. I guess he's an abolitionist too. And, well, you know, slavery was over, officially over. But as you can see, it was never over, because I just told you about Jim Crow and how if you don't have a job, you could be incarcerated and forcing this to do work, labor, right? So even to this day, that's the only time slavery is allowed if you're convicted of a crime. So through the pages of crisis, W.B. Du Bois occasionally encouraged blacks to fight back. That's nice, because that's probably what you need to do. If we are to die, he angrily wrote after a Pennsylvania mob lynched a Negro in 1911. In God's name, let us not perish like bales of hay. Lynching. Right, he's saying fight. If you're going to die, you might as well go down fighting. I'm in total agreement with W.E.B. right there. If it's over, take as many with you as you can, right? And I don't care who that is. Somebody attacking you, you don't have nothing else to do but die. You got to do what you got to do. Anyway, there's a lot of brothers that was doing a lot of things back then. A. Philip Randolph, editor of the Militant Socialist Monthly, The Messenger, also advocated physical resistance to white mobs. See that? Urging Negroes and other oppressed groups concerned with lynchings and mob violence to act upon the recognized and accepted law of self-defense. sounds to me like the Black Panther Party back in the day. Self-defense. Even though we know that they're going to turn your self-defense into some crime. But hey, if you just take it, they're going to keep giving it to you. The NAACP, considered moderate by Randolph, also defended the legality of Black retaliatory self-defense from mob attack. He said the NAACP was soft. And I don't think the NAACP ever advocated of defense from violence. Like, fight back. Medgar Evers, civil rights activist. 7-2-1925 to 6-12-1963, killed right outside his house. 54 Martin. Evers applied to the three segregated universities of Mississippi Law School, right? In February 1954. When his application was rejected, Evers became the focus of an NAACP campaign to desegregate the school. A case aided by the U.S. Supreme Court ruling in the case of Brown versus the Board of Education, right? That segregation was unconstitutional. In December of that year, Evers became the first NAACP's first field officer in Mississippi, right? In the weeks leading up to his death, Evers found himself the target of a number of threats. His public investigation into the murder of Emmett Till and his vocal support of Clyde Kinnard left him vulnerable to attack. They shot him in the back. And I got a whole lot more stuff to do. I know I'm not going to make it through this tonight. Thurgood Marshall, civil rights activist. Something like this. What's this guy running around now? What's his name? What's his name? Again. Every time he's showing up everywhere, civil rights dude. I just said his name. Anyway, here goes the real guy right here. Right, this guy right here is for real. Thurgood Marshall was an instrumental in ending legal segregation and became the first African-American justice of the Supreme Court. In 1954, he won the Brown versus the Board of Education case, right? Marshall was appointed to the Supreme Court in 1967 and served for 24 years. He died in Maryland January 24th, 1993. Rosa Lewis Parks. I don't know if she retired or she was just tired of white folks. Y'all know Rosa Parks. She died in 2005. Civil rights activist. A seamstress and longtime activist member of the Montgomery, Alabama chapter of the NAACP. She was arrested in 1955 for refusing to give a seat up on a municipal bus to a white man. It sparked the Montgomery bus boycott. Is violence is not the only means, and it's not always appropriate to react violence to racism. This is a thing they did. They just stopped. I said, we ain't making no money with y'all, but they should have did was create their own bus line. But I guess they wasn't thinking that far ahead in the game. Martin Luther King Jr., everybody knows about this brother, graduated from Morehouse. He led the black bus boycott. He was a spokesman, right? Of the segregated bus lines, and in 1956 gained a major victory and prestige as a civil rights leader when Montgomery buses began to operate on a desegregated basis. King organized the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, the SCLC, right? His philosophy of nonviolent resistance to the aggression, violence, and abuse, murder and injustice led to his arrest on numerous occasions in the 1950s and 60s. He's nonviolent. They was arresting him. This is the climate. On April 4th, 1968, he was shot and killed, stood on the balcony of the Lawrence Lorraine Motel. Malcolm X, 1925 to 1965, a militant black leader in the United States, also known as Ilhaj Malik Al-Shabazz, right? In 1964, after a pilgrimage to Mecca, because he was originally part of the Food of Islam, right? He announced his conversion to Orthodox Sunni Islam, right? And his new belief that there could be brotherhood between black and whites. In his organization of Afro-American Unity formed after his return, right? His organization of Afro-American Unity was formed, right? A spokesman for the doctrines of black nationalism and black separatism, right? Murdered in February 1965, he was shot and killed in public auditorium in New York, the Autobahn, right? So Malcolm X, here's the thing about black separatism. If people don't want you to be around them, then you be around the people who you can be around, right? You don't force yourself on people like that, right? So the black separatists are saying do for self. And there are white people that do exactly that, right? They have their own institutions. They have Jewish schools, Jewish synagogues and stuff like that. So where's the black stuff at? Where's the black schools? Where's the that's really giving us the knowledge, not in the black schools and teaching us that indoctrination stuff about Christopher Columbus and, you know, how the settlers of expansion, you know, all that old stuff. Man, look, that's murder. Let's call it what it was and move forward, because you're never going to really be able to move forward unless you just regurgitate the truth about this whole history thing. They murdered people. They murdered their way through this country, you know, and which brings me to the Buffalo Soldiers. Like that, I'm not so proud of them anymore when I think about some of the things they did. They were standing, you know what I'm saying? So I'm going to leave that alone. Emmett Till, while visiting a family in Money, Mississippi, 14-year-old Emmett Till, an African-American from Chicago, was brutally murdered for flirting with a white woman 4 days earlier. Right. His assailants, the white woman's husband and her brother, or her brother, I knew it was somebody's brother, made Emmett carry a 75-pound cotton gin fan to the bank of the Tallahassee River and ordered him to take off his clothes. The two men then beat him nearly to death, gouged out his eyes, shot him in his head, and then threw his body tied to a cotton gin fan with barbed wire into the river. Now, I heard they took the boy out the house in front of his grandparents and family, took him to a shed and was torturing and beating him. And then when they finished with him, they tied that around his neck and threw him in the Tallahatchie. That's a different story right there. Rob Bryan and W.L. Millen went to the home of Till's great uncle, Mose Wright, with his brother-in-law in the early morning of August 28th. See, this is the thing where the brother was saying, do not go down at the bell of hay. This is 1955, I think. Look here. And this is how scared black folks were. And this is what they want you to be, afraid. They want you to be afraid of death. You're going to die anyway. This kid died. Because if really, if you want to get no deeper in, his family was afraid to protect him. Because maybe if they had stood up, maybe he would have lived. I don't know. Maybe they all would have died that night if they had stood up. But, you know, they're saying it's better to die, you know, as a man than to live as a coward, you know, in this situation. This man is coming in here, this murder coming to murder you. Time to die. If you have no choice but to die, you have to do what you got to do. Until you do, till you succumb to the will of your enemy. If you don't, then that's a good thing, right? You survive that. It is said to be one of the most motivating factors that influenced Rosa Parks' decision not to give up her seat, Emmett Till's murder. She was tired. So that says she had enough of white folks, right? If you murdered this little boy and took him out of the house, people was afraid, and you know, so they knew that people were afraid of them. So that's when we come to these folks right here. These are some of my favorite people right here. The Black Panther Party. Oh, I was on a little tear here. Okay, y'all know about the Black Panther Party. I'm gonna say this real quick, then I'm gonna get you calling. Here, P. Newton, Minister of Defense, Bobby Seale, Chairman, founder of the Black Panther Party. I think it was six of them. College students at first, right? Illiterate, when he graduated from high school, Newton taught himself how to read and enrolled in Oakland, California's Merritt College and studied law at the San Francisco School of Law. In 1966, they formed the Black Panthers. See, that's a dangerous person. That's why they try to keep the books out of your hands, black folks. They try to keep the books out of your hands. This man couldn't read. When he learned how to read, he started holding people to the letter of the law and started acting under the letter of the law, right? So that's a problem. The Panthers called on all blacks to arm themselves for the liberation struggle and against the injustice, aggression, violence, and physical abuse perpetrated by the overtly racist and vicious police department in the black community. Elvis Cleaver also joined the Black Panther Party in 1966 as Minister of Information. The Black Panther Party's 10-point program started the principal stance of the Black Panther Party. Economic exploitation is at the root of all oppression in the United States. Slavery, right? And abort. And the abolition of capitalism is a precondition of social justice. In the 1960s, the socialist economic outlook informed by the Marxist political philosophy resonated over other social movements in the United States. I'm going to let the caller in. Hello, caller. Welcome to Provocative Thought.
Yeah, what's up with you, man?
What's up, brother?
Hey, now, this is Naj, man. Good to see you holding it down again. Just wanted to add a couple things, man.
Please do.
Yeah, so with the Moses Wright situation in Mississippi with Emmett Till, remember, it wasn't just the idea of fear. It was the idea of force right in front of you. So when they show up, you know, 10 deep at your house and they got shotguns and rifles and pistols, it's not a thing to where you could just be like, well, I don't know, and I'm going to stand on this. This was, you know, this was like a gang. That's how we got to think of these things.
Right.
This is like mafia fights and stuff like that. That's the kind of Jim Crow terrorism those folks is living under. And then Mo Wright, to complete his story, remember this. Later on, when they had the trial, he's the one who actually took the stand and pointed his finger at them and said, there he.
Right.
To point his finger at that white man to say, this is the one who did, you know, did the murder. Or these are the people who did the murder. So you just think about what he was doing. It's that moment of bravery to openly testify in court, knowing that these people are trying to kill you. Now, when he did this, he had backup finally. So the Deacons for Self-Defense, that group, they had come down. They took care of the family. They was driving the family back and forth throughout the trial, staying in front of their home, patrolling the area with guns.
Oh, that's good.
The Deacons for Self-Defense. So that's another great group. But that was why, you know, all of this stuff was able to happen. Carson, you brought up Carson when you was talking about. Dang, who are you talking about when you brought up Carson?
Let me see.
Oh, you was talking about the other military vet from Mississippi who was killed. You know, at his home.
You talking about
that's who you were talking about.
You talking about the one they don't hardly talk about him on any other. You talking about what's my man's name? What is his name? What is my man's name?
Yeah,
Mecca Evers.
Yeah, because you got. Yeah, because Mecca was by himself. He's in Mississippi. He's running his chapter, and he's under the gun from them. He's a veteran too, so you know he's a skilled person with a gun. So they was always scared of him. But the Carson case, the other thing that he was protesting, Carson was another military veteran who had come back home to Mississippi to help his mother out. They bought a chicken farm, and he enrolled in the local college. He had already been to school, you know, before, but he wanted to get an extra degree, and he wanted to enroll at the college. And they said, of course, it's all white. You can't enroll. They tried to intimidate him. They planted some liquor in his car, sent him to jail. Then he tried to register at the school. And that's when, you know, they arrest him. They make this fake charge that he stole chicken feed. And they sent him to prison where he had to stay for years. And I think when he got out, like right before he passed. But, so that Mississippi story, man, that lets you know the terrorism wasn't just the local thug. It was the fact that they had the government, the police, and everybody else connected there. So the Mississippi local government, you know, they would a charge like that would stand with them. And they see you in jail over something like that, the fake chicken feed story. And then back to you had you talked about Thurgood Marshall. Thurgood Marshall probably did more for black folks before he became a Supreme Court justice, because then, you know, you in their territory, you decide cases that are, you know, don't necessarily benefit black folks to the most degree. So the guys he was trained by, I think, is important to know. Spotswood Robinson, Charles Hamilton Houston. Those are the lawyers who trained him and put together a huge part of that Brown versus Board case.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, you ain't going to hear about that in white circles. You only going to hear about that in black circles because, you know, they names on the wall down there at Howard. And, you know, if you're a black law student, those are the people you study and know about. But, you know, them folks, the only thing they going to recognize is something that they can benefit from. So Thurgood, since he became a Supreme Court justice, and they can say, see, we gave one of them the spot, you know, and try to make themselves into something more. The thing we talk about in spots with Robinson, Charles Hamilton, Houston. But, yeah, man, you get into a lot, man.
I'm trying to cover a lot, but I don't have enough time.
Oh, yeah,
really.
You run out of time. Yeah, let me get out your way, man.
No, you good, right, man. You good.
Well, on the Panthers, just a quick ad. Remember, the Panthers were started in Lowndes County, Alabama. That's Kwame Ture at the time, Stokely Carmichael, and his group down there in Lowndes County. And they created that to go against the conservative Democratic Party at the time, which had the white rooster as their logo. And, you know, they had white supremacy on the logo back then, right there on the paperwork. But, yeah, so they came up with that Black Panther. And then, of course, they go out to meet with Bobby Seale and create that group out there. But Stokely was there at the Stokely Carmichael, a.k.a. Kwame Ture. He was there at the origins of the Black Panther Party forming, and he was a big inspiration to Bobby Seale and E&E. And all right, man,
that's
I got your way. I think I got enough in, but
all right. Well, I'm headed again next week. I'm gonna hit some more next week because, you know, it ain't a month thing. I'm just doing it. I started before February, and I'm gonna be going after February. But some other stuff I need to catch up on too.
Right, it's a life learning. It's a life learning thing, man. You can't take months off. I'm with you.
Yeah.
All right, man. Yeah, have a good one.
All right, thank you.
Mizzou.
All right, y'all. So that was some good information right there. Some inside look on what happened with the situation with Emmett Till. So the brothers, they said they made a decision down there based on the actual conditions down there, right? All right, so as he said, there was some other brothers was fighting back, and that's what I'm talking about, people fighting back here in the way that they choose to fight back based on their condition. Even the Black Panthers not going out fighting, just going up knocking somebody in the head. It's not what they're doing. They ain't trying to intimidate nobody with no guns or nothing like that. It's the party for self-defense. That's different, right? That's not self-offense. That's self-defense. You got to keep that in mind, y'all. Nobody's trying to be out here turning to what you are fighting against, not what you're trying to become, the thing that you fear or that's attacking you. You don't want to be that. So then we have J. Edgar Hoover. He begins a program called COINTELPRO, right? Whether it's a counterintelligence program, which basically means they get some Sambos that come up in there and betray the Black Panther Party. That's it. The infiltration by your folks, and they take you down using people that look like you, and they harass you and kill you and people in your parties. Now, I learned some interesting thing about, I heard this before. I'm going to mention it briefly. The Crips were not always a group of gangbangers. They were known as, they were formed in 1969 by Raymond Washington. Organization was in response to the increased level of police harassment of the Black community. Now, Crips, Gary Brown, Socialist Alternative. The Crips stood for Community Resources for Independent People. It was styled on the Black Panther Party, which was formed 3 years earlier by Huey P. Newton and Bobby Seale, right? So that's interesting because there's a video by, I don't know if the guy, the Crip or Blood, Bone, and it's called Bastards of the Party. I suggest you people, if you get a chance, just take a look at that, man. It's tragic and sad. It's very sad. But it was even more sad if a group could originally have been a community group to protect the community, turn into an organization which is a threat to the community. That is very sad for you to let your thing get twisted around like that. You know, that's a sad story right there. Bobby Hutton, 1968, in West Oakland. Bobby Hutton, 17 years old. This is a 17-year-old soldier. Shot dead by the Oakland police, right? In a 90-minute gun battle, unarmed Bobby Hutton was shot 10 times dead at his house. It set ablaze, and he's forced to run out into a hell of bullets, right? Robert Kennedy is assassinated 2 months after Bobby Hutton. Kennedy was viewed as a sympathetic to the civil rights movement. Fred Hampton, this is crazy stuff. There's a movie they had about that. And I'm about to leave on this one because this I'm about to stop. Fred Hampton, this is a crazy story. I know y'all probably seen that. I forget the name of who starred in it. But Chicago leader of the Black Panther, Fred Hampton, was 21 years old. This brother was sharp. He had five different breakfast programs on the West Side. He helped create a free medical center and initiates the door-to-door program of health services, which tests for sickle cell anemia, encouraged blood drives, county hospital. The Chicago party also begins reaching out to local gangs to clean up their act, get them away from crime, and bring them into the class war. The party efforts meet wide success in Hampton's audiences and organize on contingent grow by the day. Fred Hampton reached out to the poor whites in Appalachia, and that was probably the last straw that sealed his untimely death. What happened was, thanks to a FBI informant, police raped Fred Hampton's Panther Chicago apartment, murdering Fred Hampton while he was asleep in bed. He shot twice in the head and once in the arm and shoulder, while three other people are sleeping in the same bed escaped unharmed, they said, right? So the story goes that this guy drugged Fred Hampton before the raid. That's just a terrible story right there. Like, yo, folks, if you're not a part of the solution, don't be part of the problem. Get the hell up out of the way. That's a crazy story, and it seems like that kind of stuff happened a lot. With a lot of these movements, we had these Sambos get in there, just tearing it down. Like, for what? You don't have the strength to fight for yourself. You fight against you. That's some crazy stuff. Look, I got 5 more minutes left. Anybody want to say anything? Say it now. The Rainbow Coalition, right? Hampton was in charge of, was an alliance between white Appalachian young patriots, Hispanic young lords, and the Black Panther parties in Chicago. The alliance terrified J. Edgar, the high-heel-wearing dude, right? So the FBI had the police, Chicago Police Department murder Fred Hampton, says tang.substack.com. Fred Hampton was sleeping in bed with his pregnant fiancée and was close to 100 shots for fire, they said. After dragging his fiancée and a man out, police were heard saying, "He's still alive." 2 more shots were fired, and a voice said, "He's as good as dead now." They shot Fred Hampton at point-blank range. Hampton's body was guarded secretly. Hampton's bodyguard secretly worked with the FBI and had drugged Hampton ahead of the raid. So what a setup. And I don't know what to say. Stokely Carmichael. I didn't even get to the rest of these guys. There's some more guys. I'm going to continue them next week, though, because I'm running out. I don't want to cut in the middle of the thing. But, you know, what I'm trying to say is we got to fight back. And violence is not the only way that we fight back. You fight back with education, right? With changing of the way you live, the way you think, of getting knowing who you, where you came from, right? Get a better understanding of how things were for you and your people in this country, as I just kind of gave you a brief description of some of that stuff. Know that stuff. Look at it. And what do you want? So do we really want this chaos that we're living up under now? This what we want? We can do better, but you have to change you. Malcolm X was a criminal. You understand? That's a perfect example of what you can do with yourself. And I know a lot of us know people like that who used to be out there. They're not about that right now. So we need to change. and do something positive for our community, for ourselves, our families, our children, our mothers, our fathers, so that they all be safe in the community. Our community should be the safest place for us. I don't care how or who is against us. Our community should be the safest place for us and the most supportive place for us. Our community should be the safest place for us and the most supportive place for us. Until next week, y'all, each one reach one, each one teach one. I want to thank Blog Talk Radio, We Talk Productions, Mr. Kenneth Jones, the creator, my parents, my callers, my listeners. We're going to go at it again next week. And please, do not take anything I'm saying for granted. Do your own research. We can do better than this. Until next week, y'all, peace out.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruption. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the shape of a war theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on Deport from 29 districts. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Green Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.